This is the KOTO Community Radio News for Monday, April 15th. I'm Gavin McGough.
And I'm Julia Caulfield.
In today's headlines, town removes electric vehicle chargers.
CAIC forecasts for spring turns.
Lawmakers work on the weekend.
And a mountain weather forecast.
Concerns over fire in the Silver Jack garage have sparked town's decision to remove the electric vehicle chargers from the basement parking lot.
Yeah, the Fire Protection District reached out. They really made that more formal recommendation to the town that our EV chargers in Silver Jack specifically, from really a best practices standpoint nowadays, really should be removed altogether just to avoid having an incident in a garage that is challenging to access in a building that does have residential units on top of it. So we took the recommendation seriously, obviously.
That's Telluride Town Manager Scott Robson. The garage and the affordable housing above it are town-owned. So once the fire district made the call, Robson says town worked swiftly to remove the chargers.
And it's certainly a big disappointment for the town and for a lot of residents and visitors who use those. But it wasn't something that we felt good delaying removal of based on, again, those recommendations from the fire protection district.
The district says their recommendation came as they were hearing incidents across the country in which EVs reportedly caught fire while charging. Telluride Fire Chief John Bennett says reports were coming from large fire departments,
which typically are the bigger cities on either coastlines, FDNY, LA City, LA County, those kinds of things that are seeing these events more frequently than, let's say, a Telluride Fire Protection District.
Bennett says the district's recommendation is not the result of an official code or policy change, but he says those will come with time.
I think you're going to see more and more of what Telluride is doing, and that's, you know, trying to be proactive with how they approach the hybrid and electric car charging stations. So it's great that we have battery-powered cars or hybrids, but the fire prevention side of things has not caught up to the technology.
Still, Bennett downplayed the role of the fire district, noting the removal was town's decision with the fire district's support. The chargers at Silver Jack were the only public chargers in Telluride proper. Robson emphasizes that despite the removal, town does feel a duty to provide EV infrastructure to residents and visitors alike.
Reducing this community's carbon footprint is one of town council's primary goals. And so implementing some of those public chargers as quickly as possible is, I think, important to me personally, but also important to the town and our goals we've set for 2024 and beyond.
As such, town is fast-tracking plans to increase public charging options, possibly in Town Park, Carhenge, or the Shandoka lot. Those chargers will be more accessible and faster than the outdated offerings at Silver Jack. A silver lining, you might say. Here's Robson.
It's ramped up internally some planning and operational decisions here for the summer ahead of us.
In other words, expect 2024 to be Telluride's hot EV summer. Not too hot, of course. Not like catching fire hot.
The Telluride Ski Resort is closed for the season, so if you're looking to get some turns in, that means heading to the backcountry.
And we're kind of anticipating maybe some small wind slab issues once the storm system moves through, and then we stay in this like zonal flow with a few snow showers like pretty much through the end of the week.
That's Rebecca Hodgetts, a lead avalanche forecaster for the Southern Mountains at the Colorado Avalanche Information Center. Hodgett says at this time of year, most of the problems in the deeper snowpack have been put to bed.
Northern slopes still have some cold snow and they haven't quite transitioned to that full springtime snowpack. But for most other aspects and elevations, we're really just dealing with any surface snow problems. So either new snow instabilities or wet snow. So pretty typically around this time of year, you're going for that like start early, end early regime, and then you'll miss, you know, that wet snow problem in the afternoons.
When it comes to that start early, end early regime, Hodgett says recreators in the backcountry should be aware of things getting too warm.
Think about it, like if we're going up high for the better snow, like the snow is warming up and melting quicker at low elevation. So even though you might be skiing up high and it's cold and good, like conditions could be drastically different in the valley floors. So you really need to think about that timing.
All in all, Hodgett says there's still plenty of time to get after it.
It's warmer. So that's really nice. And you can linger longer and take in the views and enjoy the day a bit more. And it is refreshing to just worry about surface instabilities. Like most of the season when it's cold snow, we're worried about, you know, persistent weak layers that are very tricky to forecast and are quite unpredictable. Or seemingly. So yeah, it's really nice. It's kind of a more laid back time. And you really, you know, you just get out there and travel. You can do these longer traverses and just chill, you know, relax after a long, cold winter.
The CAIC will be providing forecasts through the end of May. Forecasts are available at colorado.gov/avalanche. For anyone heading into avalanche terrain, always check the forecast. Bring an avalanche transceiver, a probe pole, and a shovel. It was a long weekend of work for lawmakers in Denver, with a number of bills passed on Sunday. In this installment of Capitol Conversation, KOTO State House reporter Lucas Brady Woods provides an update. Hey, Lucas, thanks for taking a couple minutes to chat with me today.
Thanks for having me.
So legislators were very busy over the weekend. They had some weekend work that they needed to do. Can you talk a little bit about what they were working on and what was passed on Sunday?
There's a lot of work still to do and not very much time left to do it. So they wanted to get some of that done over the weekend on Sunday. And we will most likely see some more of those weekend meetings before the session's over. But as for the specific items they debated and voted on, there were three really big ticket items. The biggest, arguably, is a so-called assault weapons ban. And it would ban a wide variety of semi-automatic weapons, semi-automatic firearms, whether they're rifles, pistols, or shotguns. And so, of course, that was very contentious, especially for Republicans who see it as an assault on the Second Amendment. But it did ultimately pass with more support than I thought. And it's moving on to the Senate. And it's a pretty historic moment. There's never been an assault weapons ban get this far before. It actually there hasn't been one that has ever been debated and voted on in the House chamber. So this is a big moment. Now, the future of this bill is uncertain. The Senate is a bit harder to get through for a very progressive policy like this, and there has been some skepticism expressed. And I spoke to Governor Polis today, and he also expressed some skepticism around signing the bill, but he did not say he would veto it necessarily. So we'll have to see what happens and if it goes through the Senate. The other two bills were housing bills, and one would require certain communities to increase housing density around public transportation, and it would actually only apply to mostly Front Range communities along the I-25 corridor, but also some communities on the Western Slope in and around Grand Junction. And, you know, the real sort of crux of this is that for communities that don't comply with the higher density requirements and implement them, the state could actually withhold highway funding under this bill. And that's causing a bit of an uproar. And actually, eight Democrats voted against the bill over the weekend, along with all Republicans. And most of those Democrats were from communities that would be impacted by this policy. So that doesn't bode very well for that. The other housing bill focused on accessory dwelling units, or ADUs, and added requirements for many communities that many communities would have to allow residents to build them.
Lucas, you mentioned that there's a lot of work still to be done, not a lot of days left to do it, but recognizing that these are some maybe more contentious, some high-profile bills, is there any word as to like why this was the work that was done on a weekend? Was it purely just timing, or is there something about lawmakers maybe trying to like do work when fewer folks are paying attention?
That's definitely been brought up and speculated on. I personally don't think that's the case. You know, all of us in the press were very aware that it was happening. I was here in person. I don't think it was a malicious attempt to exclude the public at all. I just think that they're faced with a very challenging calendar to fit into the days left.
Got it. You mentioned that you and many other folks from the press were at the Capitol this weekend. You know, I think about like being at a library or a school or basically anywhere after hours. Was there any like fun kind of excitement of being there on the weekend, or was it purely like, gosh darn it, we're working on a Sunday?
Well, thankfully, I do find this stuff really fascinating. So I don't really mind, you know, reporting on some high profile things on the weekend. But also, I was talking to one of the House staffers. He had a really good point. He's like, you know, these issues, gun violence, housing, are what our lawmakers should be debating, are what we should be trying to tackle in the legislature. And so that was an inspiring thought, is these are issues that are top of mind for the people of Colorado. This is why we elect our lawmakers, and this is what they were working on. So in that sense, it was great to see.
Well, Lucas, thank you so much for being there working on a weekend and sharing all this information with our listeners as well.
Absolutely. Anytime. It's important stuff. So I will talk to you next week.
That was KOTO's Lucas Brady Woods reporting from Denver.
Trish Hopkinson is an atheist, feminist, and empty nester. She's an enjoyer of traveling, live music, and craft beer. She's also the featured poet for this month's Talking Gourds Stories and Poems, a collaboration with the Lone Cone Library and the Telluride Institute. Hopkinson has published 4 ECHAP books of poetry. Her first full-length book of poetry, A Godless Ascends, was published this year. She has been featured in Sugarhouse Review, TAB, the Journal of Poetry and Poetics, Cultural Daily, and The Pen Review. At the event, Hopkinson will read some of her work, with time for questions about her influences and inspirations. There will also be time for participants to share poetry of their own. The Talking Gourds Stories and Poems will take place on Wednesday, April 17th at 6 p.m. at the Lone Cone Library in Norwood.
On Friday, the Bureau of Land Management announced new rules around oil and gas drilling on public lands. The minimum bond for drilling has now increased from $10,000 to $150,000. Suzanne O'Neill, the executive director at Colorado Wildlife Federation, says environmental groups have been calling for this change for years to cover the cost of cleanup of abandoned wells and pipelines.
We have quite a few orphan wells, which means wells that are abandoned and the owners can't even be found or out of business, which means taxpayers and government have to pick up pretty hefty bills for cleanup and remediation.
The new rules also mean the BLM will focus on oil and gas leasing in areas that have the highest potential for development and the least conflict with other uses. This is something O'Neill says her organization and other environmental groups have been calling for.
Because in the past, some areas have been in the quarterly lease sales that have little or no oil and gas development potential, but they are squarely located within high priority habitats. And in those cases, we have always urged not leasing those parcels or deferring those parcels. We're talking about severe elk and deer winter range, bighorn sheep winter range, migration corridors, birthing areas, you know, important habitat like that.
O'Neill says overall, the new rules rebalance the work of the Bureau of Land Management so public lands will benefit all users, not just oil and gas companies.
In the past administration, the focus was on energy predominance. And now we're back at a balance because there's so many other competing uses for our public lands. In addition to energy, which is critical wildlife habitats, outdoor recreation, attention to cultural resources, attention to grazing. And so managing these lands for the number of public uses is really important. for everybody.
The new rules also include an increase in royalty rates for oil and gas companies. The BLM says this is the first increase in more than 100 years.
A 13-year-old girl who is a Southern Ute descendant was missing for over 2 weeks and was found last Wednesday. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, KSUT and KSJD's Clark Adamidis has more.
Audrina Bartley was found in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the same place she was last seen. She's a Southern Ute tribal descendant, and she has family in Ignacio and Durango. Bartley was adopted by her parents in Albuquerque several years ago. Jontique Velasco is Bartley's aunt, and she helps with the search in the Four Corners area. Velasco says that Bartley might have been planning to head to Durango initially.
I want her to know that she's not in trouble.
Raven Payment is a member of Colorado's Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives Task Force. Payment says that the longer the time a person is missing, the harder the search becomes.
People's attention spans are short and they move on to the next thing. So trying to capture people's attention and continue to look for people is just another challenge.
Payment says the best actions for the public to help find a missing person are to post flyers, share information on social media, and volunteer with search teams. Audrina's case was initially highlighted on Colorado's Missing Indigenous Persons Alert system. In the state of Colorado, there are 17 open missing Indigenous persons cases, the oldest one dating back to 1979. For KSUT and KSJD, I'm Clark Adamidis.
The National Weather Service forecast for the Western San Juans calls for snow showers tonight with a low around 25 degrees. 3 to 7 inches of snow accumulation is possible. Tuesday, expect cloudy skies gradually becoming clear with a high in the mid-40s. Tuesday night should be mostly clear with a low around 30 degrees. Wednesday calls for sunny skies during the day and partly cloudy skies at night. The high is around 50 with a low in the mid-30s. This has been the news for Monday, April 15th. Thanks for listening. If you have a story idea or a news tip, call the news team at 970-728-3206. KOTO News is scaling back for spring break with newscasts on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday during that time. We will start back with our full news programming on April 22nd.